If you know the fish tank, then you also have to know our friends at Planet Protein.
That's right, Big Seth, and Planet Protein is back and better than ever. They're gearing up for the momentous release of their Chocolate Magic Protein Shake, now completely sugar-free and free of sugar alcohols.
But still the same great taste, Juice. And Planet Protein is locally manufactured right here in South Florida. And to top it off, the new Chocolate Magic 2-pound bags feature a wooden scoop and eco-conscious packaging to protect our beautiful oceans.
Hey, no doubt, Seth. In fact, they're so local that my man Anthony, the COO of Planet Protein, is here to tell you why their product is not just good, but good for you.
That's right. Thanks for having me. Had to come down and tell it like it is. We produce Chocolate Magic right here in South Florida with our community in mind on the inside and outside of the bag. Eco-conscious materials, only 8 real ingredients, 4 of which are superfoods, put you in the prime position to conquer your day.
So if you're ready to live a clean and ethical nutritional lifestyle, then visit planetprotein.com now. And remember to use the code FISHTANK to receive 20% off all of your Planet Protein purchases.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at planet_protein.
Man,
you're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Livy, Seth OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Never been that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank, Seth Levitt with OJ McDuffie in Shula's Hotel and Golf Resort, Juice.
Yes,
right,
sir.
Here in Miami Lakes. It's a big weekend for the Dolphins.
Huge, huge weekend. Alumni weekend, man. A lot of guys back, over 100 guys back in town.
100 guys.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, nobody, no organization does it like the Dolphins organization do it. And Mr. Stephen Ross, our owner, has been great to all the alumni. Tom Garfinkel has been great to the alumni. And Mr. Nat Moore.
Mr. Nat Moore.
Mr. Moore, I call him. Yes, he's earned that now. So.
He has.
Yes, he's earned it a long time ago, but yeah, it's been
that
way.
Suit and tie. So we got a guest here today, Juice. I mean, we've had some great ones. We've even had a legend or two in here. We definitely have legendary status. As I'm walking the halls of this hotel and seeing all these pictures, we have legendary status. A guy that you played for.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Yeah. Larry Seipel.
If you call it that.
Yeah.
What's up, Sipe?
How much, Mac? How you been?
Man, doing well. Doing well.
You
man.
Look
good. To see you.
You know, for an old guy, you look pretty good.
He's held up okay, hasn't he?
Fake it till I make it, man.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Your wife must be taking very good care of you.
Well, you know what? I mean, you saw a picture of my wife. I have to try to keep up with her and the kids, man. That's
why he hangs out with Preach and I, because he already starts ahead of the game.
I can understand that.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time. And no problem. You know, no industry secrets here. I was the last fucking guy to show up to this thing today. So, and I knew it. You know, you never want to be late, but especially when a coach is going to be in the room. Because coaches just aren't late. They're always on that. They have that inner clock to just be earlier than you're going to be. You can't
put it
them.
This way. If you're on time, you're late.
You're late, right. So that's So what the hell was I?
You were
fired. Fired and fined.
I'm going to tell you what, you'd have been fined a couple $100s right
there.
Yeah,
at best. That's great. Well, we'll just jump right into it to make up for the time that I wasted here. Look, you played your entire 11-year career with the Dolphins. I know you as the coach. When I was working for the team, you were a coach, but you played your entire 11-year career with the Dolphins, and you have a unique perspective because you were drafted in 67, second year of the club.
Right.
And you were there for those early years where you guys had to grind it out
and
grab a few wins when you could. And then all of a sudden, 1970, you're there for that shift. Mm. And that was a hell of a shift. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like playing through those early years where a team was just, you know, we've seen what happens to a fledgling franchise.
Well, it was very frustrating because, you know, we had some good players in 67. Some guys that come in the expansion draft in 66, like Norm Evans, people like that. So we had a nucleus of a pretty good team. They drafted Zonka in 68. He was like a bull in China house. You know,
yeah.
He was all over the place. Had to get a special helmet for him, for crying out loud, because he kept getting himself knocked out, for crying out loud. And Jim Kitt came along, Mercury Morris. So the nucleus was there, but it was just so frustrating because, you know, you win 3 games and lose 11, or you win 4 games and, you know, it was tough. It was tough to finally win a ball game. Shula walks in 1970. All of a sudden, we're practicing 4 times a day.
4 times a day.
7:30 in the morning, 10:30 in the morning. 2:30 in the afternoon and 7 o'clock at night. I mean, he didn't have time to go to the bathroom, for crying out loud.
Well, Channing Crowder has a remedy for that. Just take care of it on the field.
But it was, you know, it was a really unique situation. We're bitching like hell.
That's
about
what I was
the
wondering.
Practices. And, you know, we're screaming, you know, this is too much. Well, after the 70 season was over, we were kind of glad we did something like that, because he actually got us to believe in ourselves more than anything else.
That's awesome.
And it was a good time in 70 when he came there.
Is there a game or instance in that 70 season that all of a sudden you guys realized how much talent you had, how good you were, something that Shula might have said that said, you know what, we can play with any fucking body?
Yeah. And basically, that's it. To have one game, I don't think there was just one game that did it. I think it was a gradual thing of the training camp and then getting into the preseason. And I think at that time, we were playing 6 preseason games. And, you know, yeah. We were all over the place.
We're trying to get rid of the preseason.
We were in North Carolina and playing in cow pastures and everything else. But I don't think there was actually one game that gave us any kind of an idea. I think the fact that he settled in on a group of people that were going to play for him and showed them exactly how to get it all done. And I think it all came together about midway through the season. And we started to play a little bit better each game, and it got better and better and better, and ended up in a chance at the Super Bowl, which was good.
Yeah, a few
got our ass kicked, but it was good.
Well, you made up for it.
That was a good ass kicking, though, because what it led to was something special for the team and the organization.
It did more than anything. I think it helped us. Even though you say, well, heck, you don't want to lose 24-3 in a major game like that. But I think it got us a little bit more to the point where we got a little bit more dedicated in what we were doing. And, got some players in who could play, you know. And he picked up Wayne Moore on waivers, Jim Langer on waivers, Bob Kuchenberg on waivers.
Waivers.
Yeah, these guys were on waivers.
Hall of
and
Famers.
Monty Clark was the one that brought those guys in. You know, they brought everything. And he brought in Mark Fleming. Obviously, Greasy was already here. I'm trying to think of who else. Well, then all the defensive guys, you know, like Tim Foley and Curtis Johnson and Jake Scott. You know, Jake had gone. He was drafted in 70, but he didn't come back until 71 because he went to the Canadian Football League first, and then he came back. So, you know, he had the nucleus to start with, and then he kind of built around it. So
I think some of the best things about then, there's no free agency, so the guys were pretty much stuck with
they
the Dolphins
in.
They had once they were in, you could figure out the guys that were going to be the nucleus, like you talked about, and they weren't going anywhere.
They weren't going anywhere unless they got cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you wanted them there, they were staying.
That's the only way.
So I want to go back real quick to that 70s. You know, you talk about 4 practices a day, which is insane. Was there ever a moment, like say, you guys were bitching about it, and was there ever a moment or something that Coach said where I'm just trying to think of a classic quintessential Don Shula moment where you realize that this is just not the way things were done in the past?
Well, I'd have to say, you know, he kept using one phrase all the time, the winning edge. I mean, that was his kind of go-to statement, and tried to show us that, you know, whatever he's having us do or the coaches are having us do was going to put us in a situation which was a winning edge. And it turned out to be true, obviously.
Yeah, clearly.
I mean, we won a lot of games from 1970 to 1978. A lot of games. And most of those, all of those games were in the Orange Bowl.
Right.
And they go and tear down the damn Orange Bowl. And we won a lot of games. And then they changed the logo. Yeah. I know. We won a lot of games with that old logo. But, you know, I understand why they have to do that. But he was the guy. Shula was the man who kind of put it all together. Now, he had assistant coaches that were pretty darn good, too.
Right. Yeah.
Schnellenberger was kind of the offensive coordinator. The only play Shula would call would be P10. That's the only thing I remember.
Sounds like Zonk going
right up the middle. Give it to the big guy and, you know, let the big dog eat, you know, that kind of thing.
That's so funny because I know, like, you know, you got Zonk, but you also had like Jim Kick and sometimes even Merck leading block for him at times. Like,
oh, yeah.
The little guys
were
leading for the big guy.
Exactly. We ran what they called 18 and 19 straight, which were hand the ball off out of what we call Brown formation. Hand the ball to Zonka around the left or right end. Well, the halfback had to lead block on the linebacker. You know, Jim Kick's what? You know, 210 pounds. You know, Zonk's like 260.
Right.
Well, Zonk's weight was 239. that was his weight to come in on a Thursday morning to weigh in. Now, if he knew he was going to be a little heavy, we had to stand behind him as Carl Tassif was on the scale, and it was one of those Tassif slide scales, and we had to either lift his ass up a little bit or to make sure he would make 239. One time, somebody lifted him up too much. He was like 220.
It was Tassif like, wait a minute.
Man, this can't be right. Something wrong with this scale.
That's when he figured it out. But Tom, you just have to weigh 239 on Thursdays. Well, by game day, he was 265.
Yeah, right.
Holy shit.
I mean, he'd starve himself for 4 or 5 days, and then he'd just eat like hell from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and, you know, on up to the Sunday.
And then he'd eat all game long.
You think Coach cared? I mean, I know he cared because, you know, it's the discipline and the weight, but by game day, he didn't mind him being 260,
no,
I'm sure.
No, he didn't. In fact, I think that's why he did it. Yeah. I think
because otherwise, he might have gotten to 280, maybe.
If he'd have gave him 265, he'd have been 300.
Right.
You know? But that was, you know, it's a lot of little things that he did made us a better football team.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I think that there are a lot of things that, you know, that I took from back in the day. I know he was a lot different when I played, mm-hmm, you know, but I know that
well, he mellowed out by the time you got there.
Yeah, that discipline carried on, I think.
Yeah, it did.
So we're talking about, you know, a lot of people know you as the punter for the team, you know, but I came in and you were my wide receiver coach.
Yes,
wide receiver skills.
Taught you everything you know.
Every single thing I know. every single thing
I was wondering.
I know. But, you know, in fact, I think you had some catches yourself back in 69. You had a few grabs yourself.
Well, I was drafted as a punter and a running back,
mm-hmm,
because that's what I played in college. And so I came in 67 as a running back and a punter. Won the job. I think George Chesser was the punter they had. They let him go and kept me around, which was great. I appreciated that. And then, you know, I played a little bit of running back, not much, maybe a couple downs in, you know, every game or something like that, but it wasn't very much. Then in 68, our starting tight end, Doug Moreau, got hurt. So they asked me if I'd play some tight end, you know, fill in here and there, because they had another, I can't remember who it was, or a couple other guys. But anyway, I ended up being a starter for the last 8 games of the season in 68 as a tight end. Well, Rick Norton was the quarterback at that time, and I played with him in college, so he knew me.
Right.
So he's going to throw me the ball.
Now it's making sense.
Yeah, see, so he's going to throw me the ball. So,
you were licking your chops, son.
Oh, I was. It was great, because I knew as soon as he called a play, my ass is going to get the ball.
Yeah,
I
right
can do something with it. So,
right. That's
yeah, that
awesome.
Was that was part of it. And then
five
I played
TDs,
more in
man.
69. Played a little, you know, I started in 69 again, and it was fun.
I mean, 69, 577 yards, 5 scores. That's a lot. That's a lot back there.
Hell, you had that in one game, for Christ's sake.
I tried to. You guys throw me the damn ball more. Yeah. Now, when Shula got there, I mean, did your receptions, then the targets went down after that?
There was no targets.
Was there a conversation?
My rear end. No, there was no conversation. I was to understand my ass was going to be on the bench until it was fourth down. And then the World Football League or USFL, something came in, and Zonka Kicking Warfield left.
WFL.
1974.
Yep.
They left. Well, they needed somebody to come out of the backfield catching the ball on third down stuff. So he asked me if I'd do that. I said, yeah, I'll do that. What the heck? So I got to play a little bit more in 74.
No Rick Norton 75. Looking for you at that point.
No
though.
Rick Norton. It was greasy, and greasy didn't like me. So
why? What's the problem? I mean, why didn't Grease like you, Coach?
Oh, no.
I
lockered next to him for 12 years.
Smart man.
And I smoked. Okay, and Greasy didn't smoke, and he hated that.
There it is.
So that was one of the reasons.
He wasn't looking for you.
That's a different atmosphere in itself, though. Smoking in the locker room, the guy smoking at halftime, like everything.
Coaches used to smoke on the field.
On the field while the practice going on.
In 67, 68, 69.
Bananas.
Yeah.
They stopped it, I think. Well, they used to smoke up in the press box, because I know there were coaches up there in the press box that were smoking. Howard smoked a pipe.
There's a cloud in the press
Shula
box.
Shula actually smoked cigars at one point.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. A lot has changed. I hear stories about, you know, halftime guys, like, you know, stepping out a little bit and having a quick little smoke or things like that.
No stepping out.
Just
right
in the locker room. Right there, huh?
Right there. The locker room was so smoky you couldn't see each other sometimes. Most of the guys at that time smoked. There were a lot of smokers. Very few non-smokers at that point in time.
Yeah.
But that's changed around. And, you know, the NFL kind of, you know, stopped all the smoking in the locker room and everything else. So.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it, though, you think about excitement. Think about the era that you played in, you know, where the level of pain you guys had to endure and the level of stress that you guys had to deal with. I mean, that's one of those, that's why a lot of people have these outlets between that and, you know, alcohol, whatever it is.
No,
I mean,
Toradol shots
right,
before
no,
the
yeah,
game.
Exactly.
Back then, huh?
Exactly. So the, just at halftime, just to calm the nerves a little bit.
Well, a little thing in 60, I was a rookie in 67. Now, George Wilson was the head coach at that time. And he had a lot of good coaches with him, Bobby Walston and Bob Pellegrini and Tom Keene and, you know, you name them, Ernie Hefferly. All those guys were decent coaches. But it was getting close to 69 season, I think, and we weren't doing too well. And George knew he was going to get fired. He just knew it. One Tuesday, we come in, and there's a big trash can full of ice and beer.
That's what's up right there.
So we figured, well, you know, we'll get that after practice. So George comes in and he says, all right, boys, have a good practice. We'll see you tomorrow. He left that whole container of beer, trash can full of beer in there, and told us to have a good time.
Right,
that was our
left.
Practice. And he left. He left.
That's my kind of coach.
Have a good practice.
Oh, we sat there and played. We played Pinochle, and we played, oh, God.
Pinochle.
Yeah, and everything. All kinds of
I think that went out with the smoking in the locker room. Well, Coach, so the next thing I'm going to ask you about, and a story you've probably told 7 billion times in your life, but you talked about being drafted as a punter and a running back.
Right.
And there was a specific time in the history of this franchise where those two things merged. And, you know, New Year's Eve, 1972, AFC Championship game. Crazy thing to me, Juice, it's still to this day, is the fact that it was at Three Rivers Stadium. You guys are
undefeated. And you had to go on the road.
And you had to go on the road.
Well,
to,
at that
to
time, they didn't
have
that kind of a rule that, you know, the leader, you know, the winner, or supposedly the best record had the home field advantage. They didn't have that. We alternated between the conferences.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, like, that in and of itself is wild, and I think people lose sight of that when, you know, all the different things you had to do to complete the perfect season.
What makes it even better, though, when we went up there, it was 60 degrees.
Oh, wow.
That's wild.
60 degrees in December.
No,
Coach Shula must have put a call into somebody for that one there.
He always said he had a higher authority that was over everything. So.
I guess he was right, but so here you are. Perfect season so far. You're in the AFC Championship game on the road, and now you're down 7-0 in the second quarter. It's 4th and 5. Who makes the call? Walk us through that. I think I know who makes the call, but who makes that call? What was said in the huddle? Like, just kind of bring us into that one.
I was told during the week before that the call would come from the head coach, which always, in special teams, always came from the head coach. If you wanted to fake it or you wanted to, you know, whatever it was. So I said, okay, we'll do it. But, you know, Pittsburgh was unique in the way they tried to return the ball because they had one guy from one side rush you and everybody else kind of wheeled around and made a wall.
Oh, wow.
So they could get a big return. Well, I got antsy, I guess. It was 4th down and whatever. I can't even remember.
4th and 5.
It opened up. I mean, you had to be stupid not to take it. I mean, they made it so easy. Bob Matheson was a fullback. He blocked Pearson. He blocked him a little bit so I could get through. And there was nobody there. I mean, absolutely nobody. And as I was running, I was thinking, you know what? I better make 5 yards.
At least, right?
Or my ass.
So the call wasn't made. You did
it on your own.
Oh, I just read it and ran.
Wow.
It wasn't called. It was never called.
I didn't even know that.
Wow.
But he...
Yeah, was a little ballsy. Well, maybe not with what you saw, but you know those sights.
He's a wide receiver, though, man. His wide receiver, his instincts, his skills came out right there.
Yeah.
I saw you got your ass out of bounds in that run, too, though. Yes, you didn't take a hit, did you?
Hit me.
Right.
I'm a punter. You can't hit me.
37 yards.
You get down close to the goal line a couple plays later.
Well, if I'd have had OJ's speed, I probably would have scored.
You might have scored.
Yeah.
Westhoff would have said, the way I drew it up, you should have scored.
That's right.
That was a hell of a run.
It'll be remembered forever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was
probably a big turning point. Like you said, down 7-0 already on the road. Then that big
play there. Then Zonk scores a couple plays later. Next thing you know, 21-17 dub on the road.
And they're off to the Super Bowl.
Off to the Super Bowl.
So, and now as we're telling this story, I got a fanboy for
a minute, but Sipes got this ring, right? And it's just staring me in the face. This is
the closest I've ever been to being a Super Bowl champion right now. And I'm staring at this ring, talking about that moment.
It's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah.
pretty awesome.
I truly said one thing before the game, because I sat at Carl Tassif actually was a special teams
coach back then. He was a running back coach, and he did special teams.
And Wayans, apparently.
And Wayans.
He did all the little menial things Carl did.
They were, they told me during the meeting.
Because we watched the tapes, they said, you know, don't do anything. We'll call it when we're ready to do, you know. Don't worry about it. I said, okay. I had no problem with that. But when it opened up, I mean, it's just, it was like taking
all that
candy from a baby.
Right.
I mean,
wow.
It was so easy.
I mean, Shula could have ran some
more. Well, he got 37 yards, though.
Yeah, I know. I got 37. I thank God I got 37. At least I got more than five. That's all I cared
about.
Right.
You definitely did that. Right. Did you have any idea at that moment or even after the game how important that play would be kind of in the history of this franchise?
All I knew is it gave us a chance to score a touchdown or at least a field goal anyway.
Just in the moment, right?
It was just that moment thing. And Shula had said before, you know, during the practices, during the week, he said, you know, well whatever you do, don't knock out Terry Bradshaw. Because, you know, Terry's going to throw us a few interceptions.
Right, going to give you some gifts.
So what happens in the first series of the game, they knock Bradshaw out.
You guys didn't listen to anything Coach said.
I thought he was such an authoritarian. I thought Shula was.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, unfazable. That's funny, man.
Need custom t-shirts made?
What about logo giveaways for trade shows or parties?
Wizard Creations will put your logo on anything and everything, so you got to find them at wizardcreations.com.
Yeah, the lowest prices around, best service is available. Wizard puts your logo on everything.
And they really do, Juice. Luke Freeman, who is the wizard at Wizard, is an amazing guy, and if you have something that needs to be branded, Luke is the guy who will get it done. He's done our fish tank shirts that everybody's been asking for. We've worked with them at the Jason Taylor Foundation for years. There's nobody better than Luke Freeman and Wizard Creations.
Yeah, so for all your custom merch needs, call our friends at Wizard Creations at 888-217-4084. That's 888-217-4084. Also check them out at wizardcreations.com.
And when you do that, Luke said use the code FISHTANK. He's going to give you free setup and 10% off your first order. Free setup, 10% off. You're going to save some money and get great branded product. WizardCreations.com.
On 3 yards per carry, Chris Kaufman had enough.
They churned 26% of the roster days before the game. I mean, it's absolutely, I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anything like that before. And trust me, you haven't seen anything like that. You listener, you have not seen anything like that either. And anybody who says, oh, this is the Patriot way, this is what they do. No, that's bullshit. That is not true. That is not something that the NFL does. It is not something you've ever seen before. It's not something you've seen in New England.
No.
It's not something you've seen anywhere else. So don't let Brian Flores pull the wool over your eyes and say, you know, oh, turnover in the NFL happens. Turnover, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, bullshit. That's bullshit, folks. Okay. That is a lie. Okay.
Yeah.
No, they churned over 26% of the roster days before the season began. And that had a drastic effect on the outcome of this game.
Download, subscribe, and listen to us on your favorite podcast provider.
So, Sy, early 70s, you talk about, you know, you talk about the loss in the one Super Bowl, and then you go perfect, and then you win another Super Bowl. That's dynasty shit right there.
All right. Well, you
think
know,
about
I,
it.
I thought the 73 team was better than the 72
I've heard that.
Team.
I've heard that.
I really did.
That's amazing.
We actually, I thought, played better. But you know, that's just me. I'm standing on the sidelines most of the time, going in on fourth down and punt the ball, and, you know, couldn't run it anymore. He wouldn't let me run it.
That was it.
Well, the baby gig was up. You couldn't use that.
Did he even ask you about it afterwards? Did he say anything, or he rode with it?
He just went along with it.
Trusted your judgment.
Yeah,
I like it.
He just went along with it. He did say one thing. He said, he's lucky he made it.
That's all you needed to know.
Yeah, that's right. All I cared about.
Man, oh, man. Dynasty there. You know, and one thing about it, too, is, you know, there's been a couple little close calls, maybe one or two close calls about other teams going perfect. You know, New England, a decade ago, maybe, and teams like that. How much do you guys relish and how much do you guys appreciate the fact that it's virtually impossible to go perfect and you guys did that and then you went back and repeated as Super Bowl champs the following year?
Right. You know, it's something I think we look at as saying, you know, maybe it will never be duplicated now because they also added two games.
Correct.
So they're playing 16 games rather than
14.
You know, 14 and, you know, the three playoff games. So you got to actually win 19, 20 games before you can go undefeated. And that's, you know, that's, as you saw, the Patriots, it's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one little catch in the Patriot-Giants game was the difference.
Right.
And so, you know, it's not easy. And for teams to go undefeated, yeah, you can win 7-8 games in a row, but somebody along the road is going to beat you.
Right.
Somebody's going to be prepared for you and test
you as much as they possibly can.
Yeah, I think the key most of the time is, you know, who's playing well towards the end of the season. Get on that hot streak and have your team, everything working. Yeah. Everybody, get your guys healthy that got hurt early in the season.
Yeah.
You know, I think health is one thing that's always important. But, you know, being on
hot at that time of the season is always important.
The most important thing is to get into the playoffs.
Right.
Once you get into the playoffs, then...
Then you got to go undefeated.
Then you got to stay healthy and you got to win. I mean, and you get money for every game.
That's right.
I don't know what they're getting anymore. But I know
you don't want a lot more than what
you
I
not,
got.
You do not want
to. I think in our Super Bowl that we won, went undefeated, I got $18,000. That was the price.
Yeah, I think that's first round money now. That's first round money. Now.
Might be.
Wow.
Well, look at the starting salaries today.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still a pay cut.
About something that's going crazy. Now, look how much money we gave OJ to play.
Kicks. I was just returning kicks. I was a happy man. It's like you were just punting. I was just returning kicks.
Exactly.
At that
point.
Sight wouldn't let me on the field, man. That's the problem, man.
Well, I want to get to that in a second.
Stay back here.
I definitely want to get to that in a second. But I also, so as you were talking about, you know, look at the Patriots and their run, and eventually someone's going to lose, and we see it every year. And some years it's early, 6-7 games into the season, and everybody's lost a game. Are you on that champagne popping crew?
No. That's the Southern guys. used to be. I think it was Bob and Dick Anderson
and Mandage. I'm not sure who was all involved in it. And they did it a couple times.
I don't think they do it anymore.
Right, right.
I think Howard used to. I don't know if he still does. I know Howard Schnellner.
It became almost mythical in a lot of ways.
I like that. I think it's great. I think it's a great thing. It's like, if you see all these different things guys have now, like turnover chains, why not pop a bottle, man? Get together, have a cigar, pop a bottle.
That's a great idea.
You're exactly right.
I don't know how many guys were involved in it,
but I know those guys that lived down in the Coral Gables area and stuff like that were doing it.
Yeah. And what about you? You just had one of those beers left over from Coach Wilson's last practice? Or
I had a whole case.
You had a whole case.
I love it. Is there a small part of you, though, that watches and
when that last team goes down, is you're like, we got another year?
Oh, yeah. Every
That's
year.
That's special, man.
Every year.
You imagine being a part of that. That is special.
No. I'm hoping nobody does it until I go.
They won't.
we're not in any rush for you to go, Coach.
I'm not either.
It's been a hell of a run thus far. Yeah. That's for sure. So, you know, you talked about kind of the transition after the guys left for World Football League and what have you. And then eventually, yeah, 11-year career. What's the average now? We say 2.5 years.
Just under three years.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously had a long career, 11 years.
Don't forget. Now, you know, we didn't have free agency back then.
Right.
You know, so if you could stay with a team, you better stay because there's no guarantees that somebody else is going to pick your rear end up.
Right. Right.
That's so wild, too. It's just a whole different deal. So, well, you did. You stayed 11 seasons, which is incredible. Then tell us about the transition. At what point did you know you wanted to get into coaching?
When Shula said, don't come back.
And you wanted to stay around the game, and that was it, huh? Well, I got to find something else to do.
I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. I had no idea. I had an inkling that I wanted to be, wanted to coach a little bit. So when Howard Schnellenberger got the University of Miami job, and I went to Shula after the 78 season, and I said, well, you know, what about another year? And he said, no, I don't think so. I said, okay, I better look.
You gave it a shot.
Yeah.
I respect that. You gave it a shot.
I had to ask. Because I was on my last leg anyway, and I knew it. And because I already had two operations on the same knee.
Oh, man.
So I was worried about my job and all that stuff. So anyway, Howard gets the job at the University of Miami. And I went to him and asked him if there's any way that, he could hire me as any kind of coach. And he hired me as a receivers coach. And so that's when it all started. That was the 78-79 season. I was a receivers coach for the University of Miami in 1980. Monty Clark, who had been in San Francisco, got the Detroit Lions job after the 79 season. So in 80, Monty called me and wanted to know if I wanted to come to Detroit and be the receivers coach. Says I ended up in Detroit for 5 years. And then Monty got fired in 84. I went to Tampa Bay with Lehman Bennett, who had been the Atlanta Falcons coach, and he got fired. So he got the Tampa Bay job after McKay resigned. So I went with him for 2 years because Lehman, he was a freshman coach when I was at college.
Okay. So you had that familiarity.
So
right.
He knew me a little bit and all that stuff. So that way. And then I worked with guys like Jimmy Ray, who was a really, very good offensive coordinator. Very good. And then I'm out 1 year, 78 or 88. I'm out of football. I figure it's over and done with. So I get a job working for a manufacturing company for cables for automobiles.
Oh, wow.
So I'm back in Detroit. Mm-hmm. You know, with the car industry.
Sure.
Dealing with Chrysler and Ford and all that. I get a call. No idea. And after the 88 season, I believe it was, I get a call from Carl Tassif, who was the running back coach at that time. Asked me if I was interested in getting back into coaching. I said, hell yeah.
Yeah, right.
Get me out of here. It was cold in Detroit.
Yeah.
So anyway, I go down, interview, get the job. I'm now with the Dolphins for 12 years. I stayed with him. And when Don retired in 96, Jimmy Johnson took over. So I stayed with him for 2 or 3 years, and then 99, he left, he resigned, and Wanstead got the job, and Wanstead didn't want me around, so I retired right then.
There were a couple coaching decisions made when Dave took over that I didn't quite,
it all started, I tell you, it all started with Jimmy's ass. You know what I mean?
This is where I think I'm the low man on the totem pole on this
deal.
Yeah,
I know, yeah.
I broke into the league under Jimmy.
He's a Jimmy fan. I can't stand that dude.
I mean, coach was good to me, but I understand. I understand.
It is what it is.
So let's, before we get to that part, and I can run out of the room here, let's talk about, first I was going to say, well, why the hell did it take almost a decade for Coach Shula to bring you on board? But now we know the history. But what was that transition like? Like, what are the differences between playing for that man and then coaching on Coach Shula's staff?
Actually, it was easier.
To coach
with him. Because he let you do your job. If you weren't doing your job right, he'd tell you. He'd let you know. And it wasn't, a screaming message or, no cussing, no nothing like that. He'd just tell you, this is what you need to do. Or this is how you should do it. Or this is why you should do it. And you did it. And he was really good at keeping morale up, whether it was the players or the coaches. He did a nice job with that.
Well, as a player, let me talk about that a little bit. First of all, before I even got there, dealing with some of the guys you had to deal with in that locker room, the Dupers, the Claytons, the Crass Jensens, all the guys that kind of played the wide receiver position.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? You know, for you, I know you had a familiarity with all those guys, but how was it coaching those guys first and foremost? And I know they had to give you fits all the time. We've had them both on this show.
Duper wasn't the problem. Clayton was a problem. Mark Clayton was a problem. I love the guy. He's a great player. He really is. And he worked. When he worked hard. Mm-hmm. But getting to him to work, that was the problem. Duper just run around. Just give him a pass pattern. He goes and plays. Right. He was good that way. Irv Fryer was another guy. Guy's been in the league for quite a few years with New England, I think, when
Correct.
We got him.
Mm-hmm.
And he adjusted well, and he could play. He was a good player. Then we come along with a little young man named O.J. McDuffie.
1993.
I had to convince Shula that O.J. McDuffie was the guy we should draft. And he wanted to know why, because there was another receiver out there that was supposed to be,
Glenn Milburn, I think, from Stanford.
Yeah, another guy from Auburn, I
believe.
Auburn
had a guy, yeah.
Guy could run like hell.
Wasn't tough enough.
No, and that's the only reason. That's the only reason he was on that team is because his ass was tough. I mean, I saw him block people and stay with them, and I saw him catch balls over the middle. Yeah, he was a player.
So you lobbied for him. You sat there in front of coach and you lobbied for O.J.
That's what I'm talking about, Syke. I appreciate it, man.
Shula came to me and said, are you sure about McDuffie? I said, I'm sure about McDuffie. I think he's better than that other kid because he's going to last longer. He's going to play a longer career with us. And he's great in the middle, inside, because we could put him in the slot. And that's where he shined. And he goes and gets his goddamn toe hurt.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
There we go. You guys put me in a bad position. You didn't put me in position to be successful right there, Syke.
You should have scored.
I know. I bobbed the fucking ball, man. I'll give you that. Hey, that's not what we're talking about here, Syke. We're talking about some other shit right here.
But so now at that moment when you stepped out, was there ever like, hey, this is a little bit like running that punt. I better get 5 yards. This guy better pay off. I just put my neck out there.
I didn't have a problem.
There was no doubt.
Until he showed up at training camp and he had a hard ass on him. You know?
Let's talk about that a little bit.
He was going to show the veterans that he was the man.
Well, you said he was tough.
He was tough. I tell you what, he had to be tough because they were all over his ass.
They were.
They threw him in an ice tub. And
yeah, we've heard about that
one. They were going to throw him in the damn lake, but
they stopped from that. I don't know why.
Because they're going to get their ass whooped, sight.
Yeah,
they knew better. They knew better.
Now, as a coach, when that's happening, like, so is that, hey, that's just the way it is? That's the way it is?
Well, I play, and you just got to, you know,
it's called it's called hazing, and every rookie has to
go through it.
So you have no problem with it.
I had to sing my Kentucky fight song
every meal in order to eat.
I couldn't
eat.
That's right.
I had breakfast, lunch,
and dinner. I was at Norton, this guy. He made me sing that damn thing all the time.
What you get for your teammate there, huh?
But he come in as a hard ass, and he was
such a hard ass as a rookie. Well, turn it around the next year, he's doing all the hazing.
He was waiting for his
time. Oh, yeah. Hey, it was on them, man. They started this shit.
Right. Just carrying out a tradition.
I said, this is the way things are in the league. I got to make sure that, you know, I don't let everybody down. You know what I mean?
Quick learner.
Yeah.
So,
quick story on going back.
Now, I'm going way back to 67. Well, it was George Wilson.
We used to have a rookie show. And we did, you know, imitate some of the veterans.
Yeah, sure.
And all that stuff. So it was our chance to get even on the veterans. So.
But we didn't do that with the Shula stuff. So it was a lot of fun.
So who did
you imitate as a rookie?
Everybody.
But you need that. You know, during training camp, man, you need that type of levity, man. Some type of, you know.
George said one night. He told us one night during training camp.
Take the rookies out. Get them drunk.
Yeah, I like that.
Where
you can get some camaraderie between you, veterans, and rookies who are trying to make the team. And
take your job on top of it, but you're supposed to take them out and get them, you know.
Have a couple of drinks with them, enjoy life, and come back safe and sound.
Now, did Coach Shula carry that tradition on?
No.
So you guys were really close. You just weren't a whole lot of
winning.
Well,
lot
we had
things.
To get close ourselves. We practiced on Monday. Didn't practice on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays, we'd have our own little get-together. Anywhere we could find it, you know.
A bunch of us, not all of them, all the players, but most of us.
Didn't need coach to tell you to go get drunk.
Didn't need, no, he didn't need.
It's going
to
happen now.
So let's get back to young O.J. McDuffie here.
So did he, I mean, how soon did you realize, I was right. You know, this is the guy that I thought I was.
The first year, I mean, you know, O.J., he struggled trying to get into the lineup a little bit, but he was good enough to get in there and play a little bit in the slot. We went to three wide receivers, and,
I still think it's a good move.
Yeah,
what
we made so.
What do you mean you think, Syke?
I know we did.
You made a great call right there, man.
Well, who are those other two guys? I mean, just
if we just look at that alone, forget any other position.
Right,
those
you don't
other
even
two
know.
Guys.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
No idea
who those guys are.
You had a career in scouting there.
I think Kevin Williams is one guy that we're looking at, too. Out of UM.
Oh,
UK-Dub was one of the guys we're looking at, too. But K-Dub's more of a return guy. And
But even so, he didn't have that kind of a career.
Nah, of course not, Seth.
You know who you're sitting next to right now.
Right. And he, you know, and honestly, I mean, I had Reno, he had Aikman at that point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he
had a whole lot of parts around
that team.
He did. He had a nice little squad he was working with.
No doubt.
But I tell you, back to like when they were, I was really nervous being in that locker room, you know, and I thought I had a point to prove and I had to prove myself, you know, on and off the field. First of all, as a wide receiver, man, that was hell as it was, you know, I mean, going against Troy Vincent, right. JB Brown, mm-hmm. those guys in practice, people always ask, like, who are the toughest guys you went against? And I said, fucking Troy Vincent. You know what I mean? And that was the thing for me, learning how to get off a jam and, you know, redirecting my route and, you know, the release, you know. And then we were at St. Thomas, my first mini camp, and having the fans and right on top of us like that was nerve wracking, you know what I mean? So, and I know the first day of camp, I cramped up so bad because I was out there trying to just like prove myself from all the, you know, conditioning drills and all the testing and everything. But Sipe was great, man. Sipe knew, you know, and Westhoff had me, you know, in the special teams game. So I had a niche on the team. But by the second half of the season, like you're talking about, I got a chance to get inside, play a little slot. I remember Mark Ingram stole my first touchdown. I think it was a Monday night game. We had four wides, you know. We're running little stops, and I was going to do a stop and go right by the goalpost. And Danny hit me with a strike. Mark Ingram had a little false start. And so I didn't even have my first receiving touchdown, I think, until my second year. But I had the punt return, so
right.
touchdown.
Right.
So talk about that. You just mentioned Westhoff.
You know, was there ever a point in time where you were like, hey, Mike, look, you're going to find somebody else
to return these kicks because I need them.
No.
I need more of them.
No. Whatever he could do to help this team, he was going to do. And I don't think he wanted to get off
the team, to be honest with you. I was looking to hit
somebody. He had a rough go with it. You know,
you're looking at Mark Duper and Mark Clayton, who were icons
back there.
Yeah,
I mean, they were established veterans. Irv Fryer was an established veteran. Mark Ingram was an established veteran. So he had to fight like hell just to even get some playing time.
Yeah.
But he finally did, and it finally paid off for him.
You know who I'm
proud of him.
You know who I give a lot of credit to.
Awesome.
Is, Thank you. I appreciate that.
You forget me there. You forget me there. And then Scott Miller.
Yeah.
Scott Miller told me, he said, OJ, if you learn every single position out here as a wide receiver, you'll get a chance to play. And Scott dressed out every game, didn't he? Because he knew every damn position on the field.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was good. And then, you know, of course,
being able to return kicks, that was a lot of fun. But Sype, I remember Sype came up to me, because
I think it's that first banquet when I had the tuxedo on, you know what I mean? And I was like, you know,
Hollywood, because I had a fucking tuxedo. Yeah, we're in the tuxedo right down here. I think I was down here in Miami Lakes when I got it.
We'll find out from Stu.
And Sype was like, I'm your fucking coach.
You need to listen and pay attention to me. You know what I mean? I'm over here. Yeah, I said, okay, coach.
Whatever you say, baby.
Let you know right away, huh?
DolphinsTalk.com is your one stop for all things Miami Dolphins. With news, commentary, video, interviews, and the Webby Award-winning DolphinsTalk.com daily podcast, DolphinsTalk.com has you covered on all of the latest happenings surrounding the Miami Dolphins. Whether it's training camp, the draft, free agency, or the current Miami Dolphins season, DolphinsTalk.com has it covered. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Dolphins Talk and to visit the website DolphinsTalk.com each and every day. That's DolphinsTalk.com.
Hey, Juice, the only thing better than looking clean is looking clean on your own time.
No doubt about it, Big Seth, and that's why I always call my man Ara at A&T Dry Cleaners anytime I need my clothes laundered or dry cleaned.
Tell him exactly why you call Ara.
Because A&T offers free pickup and delivery at your home or office, so you never have the inconvenience of trying to find time to take your dry cleaning somewhere. They bring it to you.
That's exactly right, Juice. You can walk into their Fort Lauderdale location, but A&T serves Miami-Dade, Broward, and the Southern Palm Beaches with their convenient pickup and delivery services, which also include alterations, shoe repair, and more.
And A&T is a family-owned company, and they've been in business since 1980.
1980.
Yeah, and you know what? That means customer service is their priority.
So call Ara today at 954-610-9383. That's his personal cell we're giving you. Or you can visit drycleanertoyou.com to start making your life and your dry cleaning a lot easier.
And make sure you tell them that the Fish Tank sent you, because Ara, my man, is giving our listeners 50% off your first order.
How much?
50. Half, Seth. Wow. Half. And 25% off any dry cleaning services after that.
A&T Dry Cleaning, the official dry cleaners of the Fish Tank.
But I tell you, real quick, Sype, talk about our playbook.
And how interesting it was in terms of, like, we can go from one receiver to five receivers,
and we'll call 84. And everybody has to know everything across the board on what to do. I mean, it was like
no rhyme or reason of much of what we were doing.
It was a memorizing game.
Exactly right.
I mean, you had to memorize everything. 70 Texas.
Yep.
What's Texas? Texas.
Texas means what?
Right.
Tight end across. That's what it was. And everybody else had to know what to do.
We were telling the tight end what to do, but nobody else, what do I do? And we had Texas.
And we had Texas X square in the Texas X.
Right.
You know, all this other stuff.
Right.
Off of it. So, yeah, it was all memorizing. If you knew the split receiver
and the flanker receiver, you were in. Because if you knew both places you could play
either spot, you had a better chance of playing again. And OJ knew them all. He knew the inside
slot guy, which is basically the halfback.
Right.
That we put in
the slot. We put a receiver in that spot. So he had to know all the halfback plays.
If weak side or strong side, you had to know tight end position. It was crazy. And that was the hardest part for me, sitting there trying to memorize all that stuff. And those guys had an edge. Like, some guys had already
been there before. So, I mean, that was part of it. I remember one time we called a play, and
it's in during minicamp. And I'm in the slot like, I'm never – We haven't even gone over this yet.
You know what I mean? And so I'm ready to call a timeout. And she was like,
What the fuck? What the fuck's going on here? You know, like, coach, we've never had that. I don't know that play. He said, is it in your playbook?
I said, I'm sure it is. He said, well, it's what you're responsible for. Like,
shit. We haven't even installed this fucking play.
Once he asked that question, you were in trouble.
Man. Yeah, hell yeah.
Was it in your playbook?
He's trying to get my ass in trouble.
I stuck my neck out.
Get your ass out of there, McDuffie.
McDuffie, yeah.
I gave you a chance. He fucked it up.
How many of those plays that you were calling as a coach were plays you ran?
All of them.
Yeah. That's so wild to me.
You know, from 70 on, I mean, that playbook never changed.
Right.
In fact, there were additions added on.
Yeah, yeah.
We had, who the hell,
Marino got hurt. I don't exactly know how it happened. Anyway, we had a new quarterback come in who was a veteran, and I don't even remember his name.
And we had DeBerg.
DeBerg.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Steve DeBerg. That's exactly who it was. Steve comes in, first meeting, quarterback meeting. We're sitting down, and it's with the receivers and the quarterbacks. And Shula's up on the podium talking about something. DeBerg says, Coach, he raised his hand and said, Coach, you know, you got a hell of a lot of plays in here. He said, is there any way we could cut it down? Shula looked at him and said, it's been working since 1970. We ain't changing a goddamn thing.
That's unbelievable.
That's right.
We had over 500 plays.
Wow.
That book was serious.
Wow.
And then on top of that, you had to know the special team stuff.
And then every week, you have to add plays. A few things. We'd steal some shit from a team that were playing, you know, from things that worked against
good.
The team.
That looked good. Let's do that.
Yeah, exactly right.
Put it right back in there, huh?
Match up wrinkles.
Yeah.
What a perfect answer, though. I went undefeated with this playbook. So how about you just call the damn plays? That is hilarious. So we've talked about you working with a young O.J. McDuffie. And there's another member of our show that you worked with as well. So after you coached with the Dolphins, you went to FAU and helped that program, right?
Yes.
So you were with Howard again.
I was with Howard again in Florida Atlantic University. He started a program up there that was first year. I mean, when I got there, they hadn't even had a football team yet. So they were getting everything settled. And Howard, I think, took over in 98 and was building this team as it went along. So it turned out to be a pretty nice deal. It really was.
It is a nice deal, but so fledgling team, you're helping them start it. Obviously, you and Howard are familiar with each other, but there was also a young operations guy that now runs our board here. DJ Priest was a young ops guy. Was he worth a shit?
Do we really have to talk about this? I don't want to get him in too much trouble.
No, let's do it. I mean,
Sean was good. He put up with a lot of crap from a lot of coaches.
I can imagine.
Especially from the head coach.
Yeah.
But he lasted.
Yeah, it was all right. I tell you what, it was a lot of fun. We went through that first year it was different. We went through some adversity. I mean, like a lot of teams all over the country with 9/11 happened that season. And, you know, as a startup, the first game of the season, we had adversity. I think 45 minutes before kickoff, we lost 14 starters for they were declared ineligible.
Right,
so we had to go with backups and got our ass kicked by Slippery Rock.
Slippery Rock.
And 14 starters right before the game?
It was some kind of an eligibility snafu.
Like, who was in charge of that?
Well,
Sean.
No. That was one of the few areas that I wasn't in charge of. Actually, early on, I was pretty focused on it. But it was a wild crew with Chris Vagodis and Arnie Romero Alfredo Roberts.
Yeah,
was on that staff. I mean, a lot of.
At what point did John Bach join that staff?
John Bach
did you coach
joined,
with John at all?
Yeah, after Vagodis.
Yeah,
Chris Vagodis was the offensive line coach. He was there 2 years, I think, and then John came in after that. John did a nice job with the kids. He really did. It was hard for him because one kid, what the hell's the name of the running back, gave him a lot of problems.
Well, we had Bach on the show. And I think every third story was about a fight that he got into in practice. And from what I understand, he had a couple of those on FAU as well.
Yeah, he did. As a coach and a player, yeah.
That's what I've heard. Well, Coach, it was such a pleasure having you in here. I know this is a big weekend for the Dolphins, but to have you here and to relive these old stories and hear some things that I only got to watch. You get to see it on YouTube and read about it. It was really cool. And staring at that darn ring while you're telling them was special for me, I got to tell you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it very much. It's really nice to see McDuffie now.
Hey, Coach, I appreciate you, man.
Doing what he did. And, I had a good time. 24 years with the Dolphin organization.
It's awesome.
And I've loved every minute of it. Then wouldn't change a thing about it.
Awesome, man.
Thanks other than the fact that I got fired.
don't we all get fired eventually? Yeah. No, I got fired myself. So.
I think I wore out my usefulness back then. But anyway, thank you very much. I enjoyed this. This is fun.
Hey, thanks for diving in, Sight.
No problem.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank.
It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, we okay, gotta dive up in that fish tank. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. That fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank.